This season of The Intersection could not have been made without Google. More specifically, Google Docs, Google Mail, Google Maps, Google Scholar, Google News, Google Books, Google's YouTube, Google Bikes, and Google Search. These products were integral to the production of this podcast. But to be clear, I received no financial support from Google. In fact, they refused to talk to me. The views expressed by their employees and subcontractors are their own and do not represent the views of Google. And now, a new episode of The Intersection.
So tell us where we are right now.
This is North Bayshore. We are parked in a parking lot on Google at an undisclosed location. Google doesn't endorse people living in cars or living on campus. They would rather we go get an apartment somewhere. You sort of are at the good graces of them not telling you to leave. The last Google employee who talked to a journalist about his living in a van on work was kicked out and forced to move. And, you know, the same thing could happen to me.
Well, the good news is you haven't given me your name yet.
Welcome back to The Intersection. All around the Bay Area, renters have been forced to make compromises, paying a huge chunk of their take-home pay to live in a smaller unit, or with roommates, or in a less desired neighborhood, or further and further from work. But some Bay Area residents have dropped out of the housing market completely, sometimes by choice, more frequently as a last resort. They're not homeless per se. Like the folks you'll meet in this episode, they sleep in cars and vans and RVs. On this quiet, tree-lined stretch of Space Park Way, there are about a dozen people living in vehicles of varying sizes and conditions. Some are parked on the street in front of office buildings occupied by Google. And then there are the luckier ones, Googlers who get to park their RVs in company parking lots.
Mind if I grab a drink real quick?
Of course.
Would you like one?
I would love one.
I don't know where you want to talk.
This is perfect, actually, because okay. It's great to be kind of close.
Confined.
Yeah.
I have a seat, then. You can throw this stuff out of the way.
Okay.
So, let's start like this. My name is Todd Birkebeil. I am 42. I am a software engineer at Google. I've been working there for about 5 years. And I live in an RV in North Bayshore.
At some point, I'll ask you for a tour, but we'll get there.
You can kind of do that without even getting up.
Okay.
All the way to the back, you can see my very messy bedroom. I mean, it smells bad.
Todd's Winnebago is 32 feet long. Inside, it's different tones of beige and gray and cream. And it's surprisingly spacious and homey.
The bathroom. This is my den. There's a kitchen, living room, dining room. You know, I have everything that you have in your house, just a little bit smaller and closer to the office.
Todd didn't plan to turn 40 in an RV in a parking lot at his job. It just kind of crept up on him. You see, back in 2009, he was living in a big house filled with lots of stuff in North Carolina. Then his startup went bust, and rather than jump back in, he bought this $60,000 deluxe RV and traveled the country. After a couple of years and 120,000 miles, he got a job offer at Google working in artificial intelligence, basically his dream job. And that's when he experienced that wonderful Bay Area rite of passage, housing sticker shock.
I initially assumed I would buy a house locally, but in evaluating the housing market at that time, I assumed that the market would either level off or decline a bit. Plus, I was very comfortable living in my RV. I mean, I'd been doing it, you know, for almost 2 years at that point. And so just decided that, you know, stay in the RV. When the housing market cools off, you know, I'll buy a house. But now all those overpriced houses from 2011 have literally doubled in price since then.
Actually, according to Zillow, the median house price in Mountain View has more than doubled since 2011, from $715,000 to a cool $1.6 million.
You know, I've saved a lot of money. I could probably still afford to buy one. But now they look like an even worse investment. You know, if I'd known the future, I would have bought when I moved here and gone down a more traditional path.
And without his Google badge and all the perks that come with it, he may have opted for that path a long time ago.
It does help to have nearby easy access to flushing toilets and showers. So the advantage of being on campus here is we have 30-some gyms, we have laundry room facilities, all meals are provided during the week. There are a number of places on campus that I consider my secondary living rooms. There's a building that has a really nice TV room with like a, 12-foot screen that you can just plug your computer into and watch Hulu or Netflix or YouTube or whatever.
Todd's RV is completely paid off, so his housing costs are almost non-existent.
Because I have access to food at my employer, I don't run the generator. I don't even keep the refrigerator turned on. So about once a month, I empty the toilet tank, and that costs, I think it's $15. The way I see it is the amount I save every month on rent is basically a round-trip airplane ticket anywhere in the world, every month. I just got back from Thailand. I'm going to Cuba, to Brazil. Further away destinations are easily affordable when you don't have a mortgage.
Is there anything you don't like about this?
Dating can be difficult when you choose to live abnormally. You definitely limit your options in terms of who would be open to that. Most of my friends say that I'm crazy to consider living in an RV as a litmus test for finding a free spirit to be compatible with me. I think the perfect person for me wouldn't care, but it just is one more thing making it hard to find that perfect match. You know, I don't consider myself a crusader for urban homelessness. I just see this as a creative solution to the ridiculous Bay housing situation. I have the luxury of choosing whether or not to live like this. You know, I worry about, you know, the people parked on the street getting harassed by Mountain View police. They don't have the ability to register with the Google car database. So I worry more about them.
Many of the folks who can't get their license plates on Google's list park their vehicles on Space Parkway, 100 feet or so from Todd's RV. The scene on this street is a study in contrasts. Groups of Googlers, many in their 20s, some making upwards of $200,000, walk past the same beat-up RVs and vans day after day. So what's their take on the situation?
I haven't even noticed them, to be honest. Yeah, didn't notice them.
Oh, I don't know anything about them. Yeah, I see them here.
Yeah, they're here all the time, but...
Yeah. I think some people probably live in them.
They don't necessarily look like Google employees to me.
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, rent in Mountain View is expensive and people are just trying to get by, so...
One of the vehicles that these folks pass is a white van circa 1985. It's easy to walk right past and not even notice it.
What's up, boss?
But on the day I walk by, the back door is slid wide open and there's a man in the back seat watching Netflix.
I just bought the van recently, about a month ago. Right now, this is my home, period. My name is George Rainey. I am 32. I lived in the Bay Area all my life. I have a job. I'm a chef. I'm married. I got two kids. I got a five-year-old son. I got a three-month-old daughter. I've been with my wife 8 years. We've been married 3.
But for the time being, he's not living with them.
I lived a certain lifestyle, you know, that caused some issues in my family where it dictates that I be away from him for a amount of time.
He's living in this van, temporarily, because he and his family cannot afford 2 rents.
Man, right now where my wife is staying with our kids, it's $1,700 for a one bedroom. And the van was actually $1,200.
George knew people lived in vehicles on Space Parkway because he often visits his grandmother, who lives in the Santiago Villa Mobile Home Park, just a few hundred feet away.
I don't want to tell my grandma because it adds stress. She would let me come live in the house, but that's not what I'm. That's not the path I'm on right now.
What was night one like?
You know, night one was like a camping trip. Then day two was tiring. Day three became like, okay, it's another day. You know, prepare yourself. You work tomorrow. You know, not to get down on myself. You know, not to say that, you know, I'm nobody, or make this beat myself up over it. It's been a very humbling experience. I got a lot of respect for people who live in their vehicles and homeless. It's not easy.
What's not easy? What part?
You know, just, you know, having to go use a bathroom, eating out of cans, you know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that. You know, I used to look down on them. But now I'm in a situation to where I'm living amongst them. You know, I look at it differently, man. You know, this is a way of life. Just because you may see somebody in a van or off in a camper somewhere, you never know what the real reason behind it is.
When you look forward a month, a year, what's ideal?
Ideal, man, I'm going to be doing what I was doing before I put myself in this situation. Work and take care of my family.
Thanks, sir.
No problem.
Bye, George.
Bye-bye.
For George, the situation may be temporary, but for others, there seem to be few obvious ways up and out. So what should a relatively wealthy city do when a regional housing crisis forces some of its residents to live in vehicles? I head a couple of miles south to City Hall to get a sense of what Mountain View is doing. There I meet then-Mayor Pat Showalter, who has really pushed the city to come up with some solutions.
What we have to deal with in Mountain View are really the perils of prosperity. And the policies that we've had over the last 40 years to bring more jobs to our towns and encourage growth have really had the unintended consequences of making housing costs very, very high, which in turn causes some people to be displaced and become homeless. And personally, I think it's an ethical issue. I mean, clearly, if you make a mess, it's your job to clean it up, right? It's our responsibility to work hard to fix the things that our policies have created.
In fact, the city worked with a local homeless organization to survey people living in vehicles throughout Mountain View.
We've had about 6 or 7 months of really intensive investigation. And one of the things that we discovered was that 71% of them live on less than $1,000 a month. That is poor in the Bay Area. So even though, you know, there are people that that are just choosing to do this to save money or for the adventure of it, the vast majority of those people are really poor. Well, what can we do to help those poor people, to help get them the services they need and into better housing?
And that's what the city council is trying to figure out this evening. And from her place at the center of the dais, the mayor runs the council's weekly meeting and moderates the conversation.
Now we're at item 7.1, an update on our efforts related to homeless residents living in vehicles. We're going to have a staff presentation and hear what you have to say.
A staff member shares the results from the survey of people living in their vehicles. 60% identify as being, quote, from Mountain View. More than half have jobs, and a third have been living in a vehicle for more than 2 years. Several policy directions and options for services are outlined. Then the public has a chance to weigh in. As usual, this is where it gets interesting.
Come forward. Tell us your name.
My name's Chris Keller. I live on Latham Street, which has seen upwards of 24 of these vehicles with people in them, including over a dozen full-size Winnebagos. This has been going on for 3 years. I can put up with the odd person sleeping in their station wagon or their car or their small vehicle, but these Winnebagos are a menace, and they take up 50% of the parking on the block, and therefore we can't even park in front of our own homes anymore. I'm sorry if I sound frustrated, but this is not a recent issue, and when the warm weather hits and the dozens of Winnebagos come again, I really hope you have something better than outreach programs to solve the problem.
Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Marcy Chrisleib. I have a job. I pay taxes. I am a registered voter. I am educated. I am homeless, and there is no place for me to go. I am lucky that I have an RV to live in, so I don't have to sleep in the open. And unfortunately, there's no place for me to park that RV because there's only one RV park on the peninsula and only two on the East Bay. And none of them will let me park my RV there because there is a 100 plus waiting list. 100 other people waiting to pay $1,600 a month to park their RV where they can get services. Because all of the RV parks have been shut down because people who already have theirs don't want to see us. And that's sad.
Thanks for coming. Next speaker.
Buenas noches. Mi nombre es Inocente Saldívar. Vengo aquí porque soy residente aquí de Montevideo. Tengo 26 años viviendo en esta ciudad.
My name is Inocente Saldívar, and I have been a Montevideo resident for the last 26 years. I need to work hard, and I don't want to pay all the money that I get just to the renters because it's a lot of money. I really prefer to live in the RVs with my family because at least I can feed them. I miss work today in order to come and express my feelings, and I just want to let you know that please just find a solution.
Para los renteros y mi familia no va a tener que comer y
Thank you for taking time off from work to come talk to us.
In the end, the council approved a $200,000 budget to provide services to people living in vehicles. That includes a place to dump waste, wash clothes, shower, as well as 24-hour access to a bathroom. It will take several months to get these programs in place. In the meantime, I'm curious how policy currently plays out on the streets. I head back to the intersection and meet the man who's writing the police department's official approach to vehicle dwellers.
Hi, Saul.
David,
nice to meet you.
My name is Saul Jaeger, and I'm a lieutenant with the Mountain View Police Department.
So let's drive down a little bit so that we're kind of in the midst of some of the vehicles.
Oh, you know what, though? You do have to throw your seatbelt on.
Oh.
Which your safety's not. Right.
Well, it is.
Give me a second. Okay. So, yeah, as you drive down Space Parkway, you'll notice that there's several RVs and other vehicles that maybe you didn't even notice that people are living in as well. But from a police perspective, if you don't mind me pulling over for a second, a lot of this is not crime-driven, right? We're not seeing drug dealers living in RVs or prostitution houses being run out of RVs. We're seeing people that may have mental health issues. We're seeing people that were on the edge of homelessness or maybe just over the edge of homelessness. For Mountain View, the approach we take, we're looking to help. We're not looking to tow somebody's vehicle and cause more problems or write a bunch of tickets and then they're going to end up probably having warrants because they don't have the money necessarily to pay for it because that's why they're in an RV in the first place. Really, the bottom line is right now, the way that the laws are written, if somebody wants to live in their vehicle, as long as they're within compliance, so the vehicle is insured, it's registered correctly, and it's in good working order and not leaking anything, and they're not drinking and causing a nuisance or blocking a sideway or a sidewalk or a driveway, and they move their vehicle every 72 hours, then they're okay. We don't, at the 73rd hour, come out here with a tow truck and tow the vehicle. I know that's probably not the best thing to say publicly, but that's the truth behind it. Basically, the person would be contacted several times and offered lots of services to try to get them help as best as we can. But sometimes these vehicles are not roadworthy. Sometimes they don't run. Sometimes the folks living in them don't even have the key because they're not the owner of the vehicle. They're getting into this sort of Airbnb thing where somebody will buy an RV and then rent it out to two or three people, you know, per month. So you have, you know, fairly high rents here. That's a cheap way to go. So when I see a vehicle that I believe somebody's sleeping in, you're in a quandary because I understand the plight and it sucks. You know, there has to be some compassion. Something that I'm very proud of for Mountain View is that we're not trying to just band-aid the solution and squeeze these people into other areas so that they're not in Mountain View anymore. We're actually trying to get to the bottom of the problem.
And there's the rub. At the bottom, it's not a single problem, but a web that includes regional housing issues, ingrained poverty, mental and physical health problems, immigration status, as well as personal situations and preferences. It's a long, thorny list for a city to tackle. Until then, people need to live somewhere. A few hundred feet away from where the lieutenant drops me off, there's a 23-foot towable trailer. It's an off-white corrugated metal box with 80s-style racing stripes. I spot an older woman with short gray hair on the roof. As I approach, I realize that she's on a ladder mid-task, and I have to ask.
What are you doing right now?
I'm trying to seal this.
Let's wait till you come on down. We're on now.
Oh, we're on. I'm Roxanne. I'm 61 years old, and I'm living here on Space Park in a travel trailer.
Can I ask what you do?
I drive the commuter, shuttles, buses. I would say the majority of people that sleep in their cars on the street, they have jobs. We all work at the same place. I don't know if I can say it, but we all work at Google. We can't say we work for Google. My company is contracted, so. Rosie, it's okay. No bark.
It's okay.
So I've been here going on 5 years. And so when I started working up here, I was commuting back and forth from Stockton. From here to Stockton, it's about 80 miles. And I was working a split, so I didn't get home until 10 at night, and I'd leave at 4 in the morning. And see, I have two little dogs. I wanted my dogs with me. So then I talked to a couple of guys at work, and they were sleeping in their cars. I thought, well, that won't work. So then I found a really cheap motorhome, and I bought it, and I came up here, and I was really scared because I'd never done that before.
Back then, there were just a few people living in RVs in this area. Luckily, one of them took Roxanne under his wing.
And so he showed me all the ins and outs, you know. He said, you need a generator, this is what you do to live in an RV.
Roxanne lived in that RV on the street for a couple of years. Then a year and a half ago, she moved into a parking lot on Google's campus, just like Todd. But a few months ago, she was asked to leave.
Before that, I had security. They'd come and talk to my dogs, and, you know, I never had any problem. Then security one day knocked on the window and said, you can't be parking here, and they sent a letter to my employer. My employer said, are you staying there? I said, yeah, because you told me I could. And apparently, I guess, Google said no. It's liability things. So I had to come back on the street.
And that presented another problem. Her RV couldn't pass a smog test. So when it came time to renew, she couldn't get it registered. She worried that if she parked it on the street, she would get ticketed or it would be impounded. So she sold it. And a few weeks ago, she bought this used trailer, which she attaches to her silver pickup. Today, she's trying to seal the trailer's leaking roof. But that's just the beginning.
Well, I tore out the whole front end because there was water leaking in the window. And then I got to tear the back end out because there's water damage there. But I'm going to do one side first. It'll be all right. Because really, I don't know, things are not cheap around here.
How much did you pay, can I ask?
I paid $3,000. $3,000 seemed to be pretty cheap for travel trailer. So it's got new tires and it's got some good things on it. Brand new water heater and a couple other stuff, so.
This is gonna sound like a crazy question. Are you happy?
Yeah, I am happy. I'm very happy. It's just easy, it's convenient, it really is. I don't fight the traffic as much as I used to, and less stressful. And I can save money. I mean, that's a lot of the reason I stay here, because I can't afford the rent. I can't. It gives me a life. And it's interesting.
But Roxanne's stay may not last as long as she and the rest of the people parking here would like. Pretty soon, they'll have to find a new spot. This block is likely to become one big no parking zone when construction begins on a new hotel and much needed housing. That new housing has caught the eye of the RV dweller we met earlier, Google engineer Todd Birkebeil.
That's actually a very exciting option for me. A townhouse or a condo, walking, biking distance to my office. That'd be great.
But as it turns out, Todd might not be moving alone. It's been almost 9 months since our last conversation, and I run into him and his friends at the Sports Page bar that's right on the corner. They meet here every Tuesday night to play beach volleyball.
What are you recording for?
Audio documentary.
Nice.
On this corner.
Oh.
you know, there's all sorts of plans for the future.
Yeah.
Living in RVs.
Todd lives in his RV in the red shirt.
I interviewed him.
For this?
Yes.
That's my dude right there.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. He
is fucking awesome.
So how long?
6 months.
So like time. 9 months ago, you know, he wanted to be in a relationship. And his friends were like, you can't make your RV a litmus test.
It's a great litmus test.
Why?
Because, well, like, we came to volleyball one night, and he's like, do you want to come back and see my place? And I was like, sure. And he told me he had an RV. He didn't tell me he lived in an RV. And so we get there, and I was like, oh, my God, you just got so much hotter. And he was like, why? I was like, I like small spaces, one. And two, you're not spending all of your money on a place.
I'm, like, totally, like, ready to cry.
Yeah, we're pretty cute together. And I've never had that before, but he's awesome. And I'm awesome, and we're awesome together.
I'm almost entirely
sure. Todd, do you remember David?
Hi, David.
Do you remember interviewing with him?
You're right.
He interviewed you pre-me.
I know. This is Amy. She puts up with my eccentric lifestyle.
No, I love it. I love it. I'm like...
See? You just got to find the person you're meant to find.
There's a wedding. I'm coming.
Okay.
My work here is done.
I've lost track of both Roxanne and George. Their vehicles are no longer parked on Space Parkway. And Todd and Amy, well, I'm still waiting for that save the date for their wedding. Thanks for listening. In the next episode, we'll consider how big is too big and whether or not Google is turning Mountain View into a company town.
There's a social responsibility aspect that if you destroy the town you live in, you might still be the biggest name in town, but you might be the biggest name for all the wrong reasons.
Next stop, Googleville. In the meantime, you can catch up on last season and make sure you don't miss any new episodes. Just subscribe to The Intersection on your podcast app of choice. And if you want to know more about the series, head to www.theintersection.fm. The Intersection is a production of KALW. Ben Trefney is the editor with an assist from Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Lucy Kang is the associate producer. It's engineered by Chris Hoff and me. The theme song and music is by Eric Pearson. Special thanks to Lisa Morehouse, Jesse Wiener, Heidi Doro, Diana Greiner, Sam Zalutsky, and Donnie Gewurzman. I know you know this, but projects like this don't just happen. This one was made possible with a grant from the San Francisco Arts Commission and from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Until next time, I'm David Boyer, and this is The Intersection.